You are now plugged into Action Features.
That's the first thing right there.
This is it. From my mom. She sent these.
What is this
snacks? It's World Table brand lime and black pepper flavor rice thins. Probably crispy.
They're probably crispy.
Probably lime.
I wanted something a little crispy, not something sweet to start with.
Well, this is it then.
That's the thing to do. Oh, hey everybody.
You take first.
Guess what? It's time for Action Features, the podcast.
It's the time. The time is right.
They look interesting. They look like kind of like communion wafers with extra stuff put on them.
Yeah.
They're yummy.
Very yummy. Very
those are really amazing. They got a good crunch to them, man.
Oh, they got a great crunch. Something I wouldn't expect from a rice crisp.
Two different shapes.
What? They even got different shapes in here.
Whoa.
That's crazy.
Whoa.
Okay, thanks, Mom. The world... What is it again? Yep, World
those
Table.
Are good.
The World Table.
Those are really good.
Lime and black pepper flavor rice thins. I don't know where
she
got them.
You definitely eat a lot of those.
I don't know where she got them. But...
Wow.
She sent like four different things. We can't do everything on one podcast.
We can't eat it all.
No.
No. We're definitely eating those though. Hey everybody, it's episode 53.
53, I think.
Yeah. And this is
a good number for this. We're going to talk about an Empire World,
which is a Star World Part 2.
Star World Part 2.
Yeah, Part D.
Part D. Empire Strikes Back. The episode tonight.
For Andrew Hard Mills, that liked the first episode of Star World so much, here's the second episode of Star World.
I hope you likes it just as much, and everybody else, too.
We were going to play the DVD in the background,
yep.
So it would remind us of certain things, but somebody didn't bring the DVD.
When I said, I'm taking this home so I can review it...
I thought you were bringing it back
after
you reviewed it.
No, I didn't. No.
That's okay, you brought these snacks instead, so that's actually better.
We'll just do the episode on that's the snacks. Then, we didn't eat on the last one.
Before we jump into the Star World,
yeah,
couple of quick things.
Sure.
Brendan Cool finished the Excel spreadsheet.
Oh, yes.
With all the references, like the Action Features compendium. And
it is great.
It cracks me up. I love it. He did such a great job. He listened to every episode over again multiple times of some things to catch everything. And he's got these great categories in there, like all the different fake names we've done for celebrities and all the different foods we've eaten. All these things. He just put a ton of work into this. It's so funny.
It's cracking me up.
I've got to put it up for download. I've got to figure out a way to put up an Excel spreadsheet on there for download.
Yeah. Maybe you can turn it into a PDF?
Maybe.
Or a JPEG.
Maybe.
Try
a
to turn it into
a GIF.
A,
I'll put
a
it as an animated
JPEG.
GIF. So I've got to put that up. But big ups to Brendan Cool.
Yeah.
What an awesome thing to do. Very, very cool.
It was cool. It made me... I laughed a lot.
Yeah. I really appreciate that he did that.
I read it all.
Yeah.
I read the whole thing.
It's very good.
And
it's very funny.
Up. I did it.
I ordered my Sideshow premium format Michael Keaton Batman today.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Is he going to do battle with your 18-inch NECA Batman?
No, he's not. He's a statue, you know, with a mixed media statue. So he's like a statue with like a real cape.
Yep.
All right, so I just want to go over this real quick, all right?
Fine.
In the statue, he's kind of got a slight head turn going.
Okay.
Like he's kind of looking as he's going down the steps. And for me, you know, statues, you know, they'll put movement into the piece because it's always going to be one stance. So they've got to work little angles and things like that into it to get some movement into the piece. And all of a sudden, people latched on and they started just like going crazy complaining about this, saying, he's got a head turn. It's inaccurate. Fail. That's a fail. He's turning his head. That's inaccurate. It's not even that much of a head turn. But they're going nuts because... Over time, there's been like special features and things like that that have talked about how restrictive the cowl was.
The bat turn.
And he did the bat turn, where he turned most of his body when he did most of his turns. But had we not had special features and all these things behind the scenes, I'm not so sure how noticeable it would be in the film to you to go, you know, he's not turning his head that much. He's not doing a whole lot of head movement. You wouldn't really think about it that much if it wasn't become this sort of behind-the-scenes thing that everybody talks about.
I never thought about it.
I never thought about it either. As a kid, I never really thought about it.
No.
And even when I watch the movie still, I really don't think about it.
No.
Either way, though, there is some shots in the movie where he does turn his head. And I went and found one. I went to the movie and I took a screen grab where he's got the head turned almost exactly the same amount
yeah.
as it is on the statue. with me doing that, I still was not trying to justify this whole thing, because to me, just because the wardrobe does one thing doesn't mean the character's intended to do one thing. So for you to say that, oh, well, the wardrobe didn't work, so it's inaccurate, that's not what they're doing. They're not doing Michael Keaton in a suit from the movie. They're not saying this is a Michael Keaton premium format wearing his Batman suit from 1989. Right. They're doing the character of Batman as he looked in the 89 film.
Right.
And they're not, at any point in the movie did they imply or did they say that the neck is restrictive, or they say, I'm putting on my bat suit, but I can't move my neck.
Alfred, you know I can't move my head from
That's
side
silly.
To side.
They say that in I think, Dark Knight or something like that, where he addresses the movement of the cowl. And if you're doing that and you're dressing it in the film, that's fine. But if you're not, then that's the same thing as saying, okay, we're making a Yoda, and we've got to make a hole in the rear because it's a puppet in the movie and there's a guy's hand inside of it. So we've got to stay accurate to the actual prop that's on the set.
Yeah.
That'd be silly. That'd be silly.
That'd be a little silly.
And that's the same thing you're saying here, because you know something behind the scenes about the costume. You expect then that any interpretation of the character should follow what the costume is behind the scenes?
I haven't seen it.
That they never address in the movie?
How bad is the turn? I mean, I've seen the movie.
It's kind of like this.
Yeah.
You know, he's looking kind of down the stairs as he's going down the stairs.
You all got that?
Yeah.
You all see that?
See it?
I saw it.
So I just wanted to get that out there. I hate when people are applying that kind of thing to this. You know, it's a behind-the-scenes thing about the making of the film. You don't apply it to the character from the film. I don't think that the filmmakers were intending to say that Batman couldn't move his neck.
Right.
That's not the intention. And this is Batman, the character from the film, not Michael Keaton, the actor, in his suit.
Right.
It's silly.
Well,
I just want to get that out there.
I don't blame you.
I'm overjoyed to be getting so much Michael Keaton Batman stuff. This is a dream come true for me.
This is your year.
Yeah. I never would have imagined, you know, 10 years ago, that I'd be getting this great stuff.
Right.
You know, as an adult to be able to buy and remember that movie from.
Right.
I'm not going to complain that much over stuff I'm getting.
No.
Or I'm going to nitpick it to death, going, oh, it's inaccurate. It's got a quarter of an inch head turn. You know, it's...
If it looks cool, it looks cool.
It looks cool.
I know he had to turn his head slightly at some point in the movie. I mean...
He definitely does. When he goes to rescue Vicky in the museum,
mm-hmm.
That's the shot I took. Where he shoots it off and he's looking off to the side. And he's like, and he says, hold on. He's turning his head.
I'm sure there are more.
There's definitely more.
I'm going to find them all.
All right.
I mean,
I'm not saying he's moving his head all over the place.
No, he's not a night owl.
The George Clooney thing.
He's not a night owl.
No.
No.
I'm not saying that, but I'm also not saying he's wearing a neck brace. Mm. He's not wearing a neck brace.
Mm, here we go.
Come on, guys.
Here we go. Here's one more snack. It's a Keebler filled pretzel bites. Crunchy pretzels with real peanut butter and white fudge.
You know, at first I was going to say, I really don't know if I want them because I'm really enjoying these things.
Yeah.
When you said white fudge.
Just have one to set off the chips.
Let me see this. Here's one.
That's pretty good.
It's pretty good. I like these better, though.
The problem is the pretzel is not a solid pretzel.
It's lost.
It's hollow inside. Mm-hmm. And you lost your pretzel texture. And that was crunchy.
I don't really taste any pretzel.
No, it's just gone.
Yeah.
Probably didn't even salt it. Huh.
All right, let's do this.
All right. Empire Strikes Back. The Empire does strike back.
It does.
All right. So, Star World came out.
Mm-hmm.
Star Wars came out. And it was so successful. Of course, Fox wanted a sequel to capitalize on it. And George Lucas, that's what he wanted. Because he had a story that he wanted to tell. And he decided to do it on his own financially.
He was smart when he did Star Wars, and then he maintained... Mm-hmm. That was a big thing to him, that he didn't want to give up the rights to do those sequels. Like, he wanted that.
Right.
He said, I want to be able to continue on, and I don't want this taken out of my hands. So he was very smart about, if this one was a success, being able to continue on and do the other films under his own steam, or you know, under his own guidance, and not... Just send it off. And, we get the rights to do the sequels. We can do whatever we want.
Right. He didn't want to give up creative license. And good for him. He makes a smart decision with this film that he didn't do in the first one. You know what that is?
Gives it to Irvin Kershner.
Exactly.
Yep.
He gets Irvin Kershner to direct it.
Mm-hmm.
Who, by the way, did not want to do it at first because he thought Star Wars was a huge success. I can't top it.
Yeah, and he had to be talked into doing it.
Right.
It would be crazy for him not to do another the second Star Wars.
I think his agent talked him into doing it. And
it goes to show how good Star Wars can be
mm-hmm.
in the hands of the right person that's not George Lucas, you know?
Yes.
It's so good. I don't think you won't find a lot of people that will argue that Empire is not the best of all the Star Wars movies.
So you're saying most people probably agree that Empire is the best.
Most people will say that it is the best.
Yeah,
it's hard when you see these polls online and stuff like that. You rarely see anything other than Empire at the top spot. I mean, the second, the thirds, and all those other things, people throw in different films. But almost always, you see Empire Strikes Back at the top.
It's got everything.
It's so
good.
And
it's so good.
It's so good. It's so rewatchable. It's just, there's so many moments in there that still give me goosebumps.
Yeah.
You know, even after all these years, there's not a lot of films that I can watch again and again and still get goosebumps during certain scenes. Return of the Jedi is one. Yeah. Empire Strikes Back is one. Batman 89 is one. Superman's one. But to rewatch them again and again and again and still get that feeling like, whoa, that was so awesome.
I'm still picking up things that I had kind of just, you know, blew over my head at the time.
Okay, speaking of the time, real quick.
Yeah.
Hang on, I'm chewing.
Great.
Here we go.
So I was like,
all right.
Okay.
Don't even start that story. our age-wise, I was born in 78.
Yeah.
You were born in 82?
Yeah.
So, we're both kind of a little bit young for Empire. I do remember seeing Empire at the drive-in as a kid, and it must have been a double feature thing with, like, Return of the Jedi. I don't know what it was, but I remember seeing the films when I was a little kid, and I specifically remember the Leia Han kiss, because I remember seeing that and going, oh, they're kissing.
Whoa,
you know, that kind of thing. Like, but it really stuck out at me. I remember that scene at the drive-in, seeing it. So, we're both kind of on the edge, though, where we didn't have to wait. You know what I mean? Like, we weren't there for 77 Star Wars.
Right.
We didn't have to wait between this Star Wars and Empire.
Yeah.
You know, and I try to put myself in the people's shoes of watching Star Wars and it being a huge thing and then having to wait 3 years to see where the adventure goes. I mean, there was the holiday special in between.
Which obviously bridged a lot of gaps.
Yeah. You don't even have to think about that. You don't have to worry about that. But you had all those years where you were just wondering what's going to happen,
right.
You know, when you get into Empire. And man, just right out the gate, they're just right into the adventure, which is awesome.
I think so too. When that movie opens, it starts with there's some danger because you see the pod drop on the planet, and you're like, oh, what's this? And then it's not long after that. Well, there's a little stuff with Han shooting it, and he goes out and finds Luke because Luke's lost on the Tauntaun.
Well, Luke gets like taken out right off the bat,
right? By the Wampa.
Luke's on a Tauntaun and he gets hit in the face by the Wampa monster. You're just like,
so you got some,
just right off the bat. It's
you
just
got
going.
Some small action, right? You're right in the middle of this story. And then it escalates after that and you have a big battle. You get a big snowy battle on Hoth, which is
incredible.
Which is cool. It's very well done. But with the Wampa, I want to go back to the Wampa. It didn't look right.
Yeah,
George was not happy with.
Well, they were doing.
How it looked, or
they've shown those sequences where it was like a guy in a giant suit and he was trying to like drag through the snow and stuff like that, and was falling over and everything, and so the full giant suit wasn't working. Like
right.
There was no way of making it work.
Right. Which I think helps
me too
the sequence because they just like in Jaws, they had to find ways to shoot this thing and make it work, and since you don't fully see the Wampa. It's scarier.
Exactly.
It's scarier because you just see little snippets of him. You see his claws. You see him kind of walking
by.
You
see him hit, and
you see
that face real close up at you, and
right.
It's like, whoa.
Right. Great piece of direction here. When Luke is hanging, I noticed just recently, probably, he's reaching for the lightsaber, and he reaches for it, and he closes his eyes, and then he reaches for it again. And the camera, as the Wampa's coming, you know the Wampa's coming on, the camera zooms in and pans closer in on the lightsaber. And that's a piece of... It's such a small thing, but it really builds the intensity of that. And something like that is not seen in Star Wars, where it's all pretty much straight cuts, straight shots. There's not really any zoom work or anything like that in Star Wars. The budget was...
Oh, it's totally different.
50% higher on this film than the other.
This is crazy.
And also, Irvin Kershner directed it.
This is crazy because as we're talking about just little scenes like this, there's like four or five thoughts that are popping in my head like, oh, I got to mention this, I got to mention that, I got to mention this. And that's what this movie is. It's like every scene has something in there, you know, and there's like different layers and things like that. like you're talking about what, the way it's filmed and things.
Yeah.
Star Wars, obviously, it wasn't a hit. There was no hit to begin with. I mean, it's a hit. I'm talking ahead of myself. There was nothing before Star Wars to show it was going to be a hit.
Right.
So it was pretty much just get it done, get it done, get it done, get it done. And a lot of the film was just a disaster, and then the editing and stuff put it back together again as best it could, but it still became a hit. But now we're on to the second film, and so time is being spent that wasn't being spent on the first one.
Right.
Back to the Wampa. In the special edition version, they went overboard, and they showed you so much Wampa. Yeah. He's chewing on stuff, he gets his arm chopped off, and he screams, and all this different stuff. And it becomes a whole different scene. The suspense, to me, is like less there.
Right.
The encounter with the Wampa, just like, oh, he cut off his arm, and now he's... Couldn't he just keep going after him now? He's got one arm cut off, and it's this thing... It seemed like Luke would have done more damage. The Wampa's still there, and his wound's cauterized. And it changes the whole dynamic, and that's why leave it alone.
Right.
Leave it alone. I think that Empire's special edition is the least offensive of the three special editions.
Jedi's bad.
Jedi's really bad. Star Wars is really bad.
Yeah. I didn't even watch.
I saw all three when they hit the theaters, and I've seen them since. Empire, the only changes really in it are this Wampa scene, the ones that come out in my mind, other than cleaning up certain things. I actually like some of the cleanups, like when they did the snowspeeder sequence, and they cleaned up the transparency of the snowspeeders so you can't see anything through them. That's well done.
Stuff like that is good. The original Star Trek series,
cleaning
they did that.
Up
that looks
things
great.
Is fine. And then like a lot of it's spent in Cloud City where they open it up and make it seem like a bigger city and they're taking out walls and they do that sequence where you follow the cloud car through it. And that's not that offensive. We'll get into some of the other ones that I think are offensive that keep going back and forth later on when we talk later about the film. But one of the ones I do find offensive, and I don't think I found it as offensive at the time, is all the extra Wampa stuff that they added into that sequence where it's like, here's all these shots of the Wampa. I would have loved to have seen the deleted scenes of the Wampas being trapped inside the Hoth base and 3PO taking the sticker off the door where the Wampas are trapped.
Mm.
Do you know about this?
I don't know about that.
So there's Wampas that come into the Echo base, and they don't know what to do, so they just trap them, and they put a sticker on the door to that it's barricaded in, and the Wampas have like torn up Tauntauns and people and all this different stuff, and they've got them trapped. And so as Han and Leia are making their way to the Falcon, 3PO walks by the door and he tears the sticker off as they're heading to the Falcon. And so then the snowtroopers check the door, thinking that there's people in there, and they open it up and the Wampas attack them.
Why would 3PO take the sticker off?
To trap the snowtroopers.
Oh, the snowtroopers come in.
They're chasing him, and he sees the door, and he tears the sticker off.
A heroic moment for 3PO.
A heroic moment for 3PO that's removed from the film because the entire Wampas... in the Hoth base sequence is gone.
Right.
So it wouldn't have made sense for them to tear the sticker off and have this heroic moment because you don't know that the Wampas are in there.
That's kind of cool, though.
It's kind of cool. I would have kind of liked to see that put back in instead of what they did with the special editions and throw it in all these Wampa scenes.
It's like stuff,
chewing
just,
stuff.
Just because they had the technology, they did it.
To do it.
Speaking of Han and Leia, this movie also...
I'm loving these things.
...escalates their relationship... obviously, but from the get-go, there's that tension there, and you can tell there's stuff that's taken place in between the time, and Han has some great lines.
He
looks cool in his new jacket. He's got a new jacket.
The clothes.
Yes.
Across the board. Everybody's outfits are awesome throughout the film.
Really, really cool looking, everybody.
In the first movie, Han's outfit is cool.
Yeah.
Luke's outfit is, he's a farm boy, but I wouldn't think of that like, it's cool. And, Leia's got the white outfit on, she's a princess. But these movies, this movie, all the outfits are cool. The Hoth gear is cool for both of them.
Cool.
The Luke Bespin is amazing.
Yeah, he's cool.
The Han Bespin is amazing. Leia's Hoth outfit is really cool. That's, like, my favorite Leia outfit.
I think that's as cute as she's looked, too. I'm not knocking Slave Leia, but I'm just saying, I think that's maybe the pinnacle for me at least, because she's just cute, and everything looks the color wise is picked out very well. Awesome outfits.
Yeah, very very cool
in the movie. You said something. I was
well. You keep thinking, trying to think what you're thinking of. Another interesting thing here is that so much time has passed between the end of Star Wars to Empire. It just doesn't just jump in right where Star Wars ends. It's like things have happened, and we've gotten to a point, and we're not going to spell it all out for you. You know, that's not what they're going to do in the film. They're not going to tell you point A to point B, or to see what's going to happen, what's occurred since Star Wars ended into Empire. It's like you're left to kind of figure things out on your own.
Right.
And kind of formulate your own thoughts about what happened between the two.
It's interesting. And it's also revealing in Han's character, because he's still there. Mm-hmm. And even though he's still trying to leave, don't get all mushy on me, Princess Solo. Yeah.
You know he's not going.
You know he's stuck around because they needed him to. It's not just because he couldn't fix the Falcon or whatever. It reveals something about his character, his nature, deeper down, where mm-hmm. he wants to help out, and he's also in love with Leia, and Leia's in love with him, obviously.
Yeah. But,
So that's something cool. We also have the super first cool. appearance of a Jedi spirit.
Yeah.
Now we hear Obi-Wan's voice in the first movie.
That's what I want to touch on.
Okay.
I'll hang on to it. No, go ahead.
Oh, well, I'm just saying, it's the first appearance. This is where you see Ben show up, and you're like, what? I thought Ben was gone.
We heard his voice at the end of Star Wars, but...
Could have been in Luke's thoughts,
you know, or whatever.
Yeah,
this could still be. Luke is dying.
That's right, it could be.
He's going into hypothermia or whatever, and he's dying. You know, like, it's... That could just be a vision in his head, but it's saying certain things to him, so you're still left guessing. And that's so cool to,
you know,
like,
what else?
Leave you guessing.
By the time you see him on... Dagobah, you've forgotten about that sequence. You've been in through a hundred other things, and you know, you totally forgot that Ben was
a spirit,
and here he shows up. Yeah. And it's like, oh, okay.
The thing I forgot about with the lightsaber in the Hoth Wampa Cave, that's the first time you see the Force move something. It's the first time in the first Star Wars, the Force isn't used to make stuff move or to control other objects. He uses it. Obi-Wan uses it, you know, and he makes a noise or something at the stormtroopers, and you see, you know, fighting the training ball and things like that. But you don't see, so you don't really know what Luke's doing at first, especially if it's your first time viewing it, and you've just had the first movie, and he concentrates, and then it starts to move. It's like he's making that move with his mind. He's like, he's using the Force to make something physically move and come to him. So that's like a big moment, especially if you're coming off of Star Wars, and you're seeing this for the first time in 1980. You know, and you're watching it happen, you're like, whoa, the Force can make objects move. You know, like, you can move things with your mind.
Right.
And then, of course, it expounds and keeps on going throughout the film, especially with Yoda and things like that, seeing everything moving. But that was the first moment where you saw something being moved with the Force, which is a really cool moment.
Yeah. And it gets bigger later in the film.
Yeah.
Speaking of lightsaber, real quick, a cool thing, this is such a small thing, but when Han gets Luke's lightsaber and uses it to open the Tauntaun... He's the only person in all... I'm going to go ahead and acknowledge that there are other three movies. In all six movies, who is not a Jedi or Sith to use a lightsaber.
Yeah.
And it's just a cool little thing, because he's just using it as a utility thing. It's not like some crazy flashy weapon. It's just like, this is a tool that is used at this time period.
Well, you can tell he's a little uncomfortable with it. Like,
yeah,
when he turns it on.
Yeah.
But what's great about that scene, too, is it's Han has he doesn't have the Force, and he's not like a Wookiee, and he's not, you know, he's not a robot, and he's not this, he's not that. He's just a guy.
Freezing his butt off.
But he thinks on his feet. It's like, okay, his Tauntaun dies, he looks over there, and he looks at Luke, and it's just like, it's just there. Like, I'm going to cut this Tauntaun open, and I'm going to stick my friend inside of it.
That's
so
taken
lives.
From an old Indian
trick.
Indian cut a bear open one time.
Who knew if there were Indians in a galaxy far, far away?
Well, but maybe they weren't. Maybe Han was the first one.
Maybe Han is the one that invented it. Han's but first. He saves him, and then he gets him time to put the shelter up and save Luke, and they stay together. And then, I should mention the radio dramas. In the radio dramas, they have an entire sequence of them inside the shelter, and like... getting on each other's nerves, and Luke, you know, fading in and out of, you know, basically conscience, and he's still like dying,
right?
And Han's having to keep him alive and keep him talking and stuff like that, basically. And it's just a really cool sequence with the two of them just trapped until, you know, and they think the shelter's going to fall in on them and all this thing. And we talked about the radio dramas the first time around, but you get a lot of missing sequences in those radio dramas, and they're well acted, and they're, you know, you feel like you're watching it as you're just listening to it.
Mm.
But that scene in particular, really, I remember them being trapped inside there, and that whole sequence was really, really cool.
That'd be cool. I understand why they cut it from the film. There's just so much stuff to put in there, but that I would like to.
It would be cool.
I would like to see that.
Man, we're only in Hoth, and we're already at what?
I know we got a book. Let's go to Empire real quick, to the Empire side.
Okay.
You get. The introduction of the AT-AT walkers, AT-AT walkers.
And the AT-ST. They're on Hoth too.
Are they?
Yep.
I don't remember.
They are. The AT-ST's on Hoth as well.
Hmm. Yep. Okay, so you get the two walkers.
Yep, you get both walkers.
And which includes new drivers, so you get, you know, something other than a stormtrooper.
Yeah.
You see Darth Vader's meditation chamber for the...
You get this, and the snowtrooper too, actually. The snowtrooper and the
That's right. The snowtroopers. And yep. And kind of an idea of how these battles get fought, because in the first one it was... Well, they had the sand troopers in the first one, which, you know, was cool as outpost. But now they have specific the snowtroopers. They have specific machinery, and everything to send out to different types of worlds or whatever.
Well, and really the whole cool. the whole explanation too. When Vader's like, he came out of light speed too close to the system, so it's almost like if they come in too close, they don't have time to prepare everything and send down like smaller ships. It's kind of confusing when he says all that, because he's like. They're alerted to their presence, and he came out of light speed too close to the system. So it's almost like they knew they were going to send down stuff or something like that, but they came in too close, and now the rebels are alerted, and they've got the shield up or something like that. So it's almost like if they come out further out or something, they can sneak up on it somehow, or I don't know, but it's again, not spelled out for you. It's kind of left to your own interpretation, but it's now become a ground battle because they've come in too close or something like that.
Oh, I see. Yeah, I like that.
So, which is great. I think it's... And the Empire's prepared. That. They're like, well, we got AT-ATs and stuff up on these ships, so let's
send these things down.
So those ships must be immense.
Yeah, they got to be gigantic.
If you're carrying around AT-ATs just in case.
Right.
You know, just in case.
I bet they fold up. I bet their legs fold up or something. His meditation chamber or whatever I think is a cool touch, because you don't really know what's going on inside that thing.
Yeah.
And you get the view of his helmet coming out.
And the back of his head.
Right.
You get just a little taste.
Right. And that's neat. And that also is coupled with, you see the Emperor for the first time. Just in the hologram.
Yeah.
But,
and he's different, too. I mean, he looks, in this film, he looks totally different than he does in...
Jedi. Yes.
Because they used, like, a makeup effect and chimpanzee eyes.
Yeah, he's got like puffy.
Like puffy makeup, and then they superimposed chimpanzee's eyes to give it an otherworldly, like alien feel to it.
I'm glad that they didn't stick with that in
Me
Jedi,
too.
But
it was cool.
But for a hologram,
yeah,
you could say there's a glitch or something. It's kind of neat.
Well, they've gone and they fixed it on the special edition, and in the other version.
Oh yeah, they put the other guy in too.
Yeah,
that was a different. There's a different actor.
Yeah, totally different. Yeah, so they put in the one. Yeah, well, it's cool during that scene too. Because the exchange, you could tell that Vader doesn't want Luke to be destroyed. And he's saying the son of Skywalker must not become a Jedi. And they're still not addressing that it's him.
Right.
But, you know, he's playing it off. Like, the Emperor obviously knows that Vader is Skywalker. But he's you can see a little glimmer of maybe Anakin, a little bit of hope in him. Because he's like, he's just a boy. Obi-Wan can no longer help him. Like... He's thinking on his feet. Away.
He's forced to come up with a different, like, what reason could we possibly keep Luke around for?
Yeah.
I'll turn him. Yeah, yeah. What if we turned him?
What if we turn him? We can turn him.
And Vader persuades the Emperor.
Yeah. And it's really cool. In the first movie, you get Grand Moff Tarkin, and Vader's kind of taking orders from him, but at the same time, you're like...
Vader's in charge.
Vader's pretty much in charge.
That's what
even
I was.
Though Tarkin's
that's another
there.
Thing I was going
to
say about this.
But Vader's bowing down to this
right,
guy.
Vader is answering to somebody.
Yeah. So the big baddie from the first movie is bowing down to this guy in the second movie. So this guy's got to be the ultimate evil,
right.
You know. And so that was really cool, that entire sequence. And almost hearing, I mean, we didn't know at the time when you first watch it, you don't know that Vader's bargaining for his son.
Right.
But when you go back and rewatch it and you learn that Luke is his son, then you're watching and going, I see what he's doing here.
Yeah.
He doesn't want to just kill him. Like he's
totally,
he wants to try and figure out a way that he doesn't have to kill him.
We also get the introduction of the bounty hunters. Boba Fett, of course, is everybody's favorite.
He's everybody's favorite.
He's the coolest of all the bounty hunters.
Named in the movie, either.
Not named in the movie,
they never call him Boba Fett. They say the bounty hunter.
I don't think any of them are named, are they?
Yeah, I don't think any of them are dressed by name, but Boba Fett was the big one.
Bounty hunters.
He's
we don't
called
need
the
that
bounty
scum.
Hunter. Yeah, you can take him to the bounty hunter. Or, he's all yours, bounty hunter.
That's
he's giving Honda this bounty hunter and all these different things.
Right.
He doesn't want you at all. He wants someone named Skywalker.
Well, you get that entire... I mean, they're all cool looking.
Right.
And they all are like, we're totally different than anything you'd seen from the Empire. It was like, okay.
That's right, because you get some bad guys that are not part of the Empire, which is new.
Yeah.
And they're coming in, they're just guns for hire.
They're looking totally different than everything else.
Yeah.
And the fact that Boba Fett gets addressed personally by Darth Vader, you knew immediately that that guy's going to be
right.
the one to watch.
No
you know?
Disintegration.
Yeah, it's like he takes his time just to talk directly to Boba Fett.
He's probably got a reputation.
And he looks so cool.
Yes.
The world has gone overboard on Boba Fett.
Boba board.
It became this thing where Boba Fett was a popular character, so George Lucas saw that and decided to go nuts with it. Put him in the special edition and make him a main character in the prequel trilogy and all those different things. If you leave Boba Fett just how he is in Empire Strikes Back, and even though he dies in Jedi, you know, even what he is there, you know, there's some great moments with him in Jedi. Yeah. If you leave it right there and just that's it, he's a fantastic character. He is so cool.
He makes a big splash with the small amount of time that he has.
Yep. We talked about this with something else, too, where you need to end it. Like Coulson. We talked about Coulson last show, where you give you just a taste, just enough, right. So there's still some mystery there.
Right.
And, you know, the world will take care of that. They'll all love him, and they'll want to see more of him, but don't go overboard with it. They went overboard.
You got to leave them wanting more sometimes with some things. I guess we can go back to... We need to get to... Make sure that we get to Dagobah. Let's get to Dagobah.
Gotta get to Dagobah.
So we're coming back. Luke is... They did the Hoth battle. Luke is going to Dagobah.
Really quick.
Okay, go.
Luke takes out an AT-AT all by himself.
That's true, he does.
That was awesome.
With no snowspeeder also.
With no snowspeeder. He's got his lightsaber and like a charge, and that's about it.
Yep.
And it's showing that Luke is comfortable. He's maybe not
He's
using,
getting there. He's yeah. certainly... Yes.
He's maybe not using the Force like a Jedi or something like that, but you can tell it's given him an edge. You know, like he's able to do certain things that the other guys aren't doing. There's nobody else that's running up and taking out an AT-AT by themselves.
Without flipping around and...
Yeah, exactly. He's not doing giant crazy jumps and stuff like that. It's just confidence. Like, right. He's just like, you know what? I'm going to go ahead and destroy this AT-AT now. Like, it's just like, he just does it.
I think it's partly also, it just has to be done.
Yeah.
That's it. Oh, my snowspeeder's taken out. This still has to be done.
Yeah, I still got to take out one of these if I can.
Do it.
So I'm going to take this one out.
So he gets to Dagobah, and he's looking for Yoda. And great sequence, by the way. But this is where the film turns dark. It takes its turn for the darker half. And I never really thought about it until now. But Luke is separated from the group for almost the entire movie.
Yeah,
I mean, that's it. He's with Yoda there.
And he's there for a while.
For a long time, yeah.
Yeah, because, I mean, they're out, you know, doing their thing and getting lost and going here and ending up in Cloud City. And they're on Cloud City for a while, I think, before something happens.
It's got to be at least, you know...
They change clothes and they lose 3PO. He gets blown apart. They're trying to put him back together. All these things are happening while Luke is busy training, and he's gone for a long time.
Right.
And he doesn't know what's going on. When he left, the Empire was invading Hoth. He didn't know who made it where. You know, he knew that, you know, that they were all getting out of there, and they would meet him at a rendezvous point or whatever. But at the same time, the Empire was still there; they're still up in space, so he doesn't know anything.
You know, something I love about this too is that the whole time he's on Dagobah is his training sequence. He's training, and you're showing it, and they're taking their time with it. It's not just like, hey, okay, he made it, and we'll have a couple jokes, and now we'll do a quick montage.
Yeah.
Of him getting in shape real quick and whatever. No, you spend a lot of time with him. He's learning, you know, mentally. Yoda is talking to him. He's still not fully learned by the time he leaves. He's stubborn.
Yep. There's so many great sequences on Dagobah. Well, first of all, an introduction of Yoda. At first, it's a joke. And it's a show that the most unassuming character can be the most important. You know, and he's like a joke character at first.
In stature, but also...
He's joking around.
Cracks me up.
Yeah,
the way he's hitting.
When he's digging through that thing and his little butt's like shaking and stuff, he's like, he turns around and stuff with that light. It's so funny.
R2-D2 takes it from him and he's like, oh, no. Oh.
And he's hitting him and stuff
and
like that.
And he hits him with his cane.
Yeah. It's so funny. And you never suspect that he was Yoda.
Right.
If you were watching the film for the first time and you didn't know who Yoda was, you wouldn't think that it's Yoda.
Right.
And then it's obviously he's testing his patience and he has none. And then when it's like a light switch.
Exactly. Once you find out, he's all business, and you're like, wait a second, this guy could train.
Yeah, it's like it's crazy.
That's
it's such a flip when he just stops and he's just like, I cannot teach him. And it's just like, it's just, it becomes this whole other character.
Right.
And that's a huge credit to Frank Oz and like the voice acting and the movement and stuff like that. The character in overall, I never once was, and I watched, I still watch it, I never think of him as a puppet. It's Yoda.
That's something that I wanted to comment on too, is I've watched some behind the scenes stuff under the Empire of Dreams. Mm-hmm. There's a long documentary. If you haven't watched it, it's great. It's worth watching. But they're showing behind the scenes footage of him. And when he's moving around behind the scenes, he looks like an actor who's just there on set.
Yep.
That's how good it looks. It looks fantastic.
When it's just sitting there, then it looks like a lifeless puppet. When it's just there. Right. Like if it's sitting in, at a museum or whatever, right. it's a puppet. When Frank Oz has it on and he's doing stuff, it's a character. I mean, it's just, way more than the prequels.
Oh,
way
totally.
More. Yeah. The CGI one, it always looks to me like it's a cartoon that's mixed in.
Yeah.
When Yoda is in Empire, it's just Yoda. That's a real
character.
There's
no substitute for having something on film, getting in the camera. But
and they really went all. I mean, that was a big risk. I mean, because at the time you've just got Muppets and stuff like that.
Right.
To this integral of a character to do a puppet, because he wanted it to be that small. He wanted it to be this little small unassuming character, and you had to do it as a puppet. There was really no other way. To do it, there's certain sequences where he's walking away where it's a guy in a suit, like a little midget in a suit or whatever, or a small person, might be PC. But there really wasn't, and so they had to build sets up on top of levels to get
the
puppetry
whole,
working around
yeah.
it. There was a big moat underneath. With all the water and all this different stuff going on. All these things you had to build around to make this work, and it's just such a huge risk to do all that and just take the chance that
I
everybody's
going
to buy it.
There were a lot of complications with it, too.
Yeah.
Luke couldn't really hear...
what was going
underneath
on?
Because the dudes were underneath the floor. Yeah. They had a lot of challenges
and
during
just,
this shoot.
You don't see that anymore.
They went over budget too.
Yeah, you don't see them taking chances like that anymore. Where it's like,
no.
this will make or break the movie right here.
To something else, once again, to George Lucas's credit, probably, unless his wife had something to do with
probably.
It. When he did go over budget, he could have given everything up to the studio. To get the film done, and he said, "No, I'm not giving up my creative freedom on this." And he went out and took out a loan and whatever, and paid for the rest.
Did what
of
he had
him.
To do.
So, yeah, did what
Which
he had
is
to do.
A smart thing to do.
Smart thing to do, and it worked. And it worked out.
Worked great. But the entire sequence on Dagobah, from start to finish, every bit of it is amazing. I mean,
it
seeing
really
Luke
is.
Do the things, and he advances quickly because you know how strong in the Force he's supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so you see him. You know, go from just being there and not really understanding to like doing all the flips and you know, throughout, not overboard
not crazy flips.
Flips.
He does a flip.
He does a flip there and then he starts to be able to levitate things. And, you know, we see him fail at the X-Wing and all these different things. But you can see that in the prequels, they want you to believe that these Jedis have trained for forever, you know. But Luke is mastering it relatively quickly, you know, compared to what you watched in the other prequels where a Padawan's a Padawan for 20 years or whatever from birth. But Luke he's got like this short time with Yoda, and he learns enough that he's able to start doing these things.
It also is a testament to Yoda's
his ability
to teach.
I love when he gets the vision. And anybody that tells me that Mark Hamill is a weak link when it comes to acting, the scene where he gets the vision, he's like, Han, Leia! And then he drops everything, and just like the look on his face when he asks, you know, will they die? It's just, there's so much torment. Like, he wants to stay and do what he's supposed to do, but he wants to help his friends.
There's a lot of emotion in there, too.
Yeah.
And to get that emotion out of a puppet, once again, it's just phenomenal to me. The scene where he goes into the cave, this is where I feel like, this is where Luke grows up. He's been through some battles and everything, but he goes into this cave. Yoda tells him he doesn't need to take his weapons. He takes them anyway, which I feel like... okay, you could have listened to your master, but also you're now making your own decisions on things. He takes... I knocked over this box.
That's okay. Just put it there.
He takes... goes into the cave, and Vader's there. And instead of running out of the cave, gets out his lightsaber. He turns it on first.
He's ready.
Vader's lightsaber is not even on yet. Luke turns it on first. You got to think about this. He's facing who is the baddest of the bad. He's the bad guy. He killed his last master. He's watched it happen. This is his ultimate fear, and he faces it head on. Luke grows up a little bit.
Totally
he also
does.
Sees himself in Vader's mask,
and
which
that's a huge foreshadowing. Like,
right?
Okay,
but it's just like, what does that mean?
Yeah, what does it mean?
What would that
does
mean?
It mean that Luke's his own worst enemy? Does it mean that he's,
right, exactly.
You know, he could become this? It doesn't mean any of that. And it's, but it's also laying the seeds like Vader is Luke's father. You know, like here it is right in front of you. But it was not so blatant that you would know right off the bat that, hey, he's his father. It was
no,
also,
not at all.
It could be construed so many ways.
Even knowing after that, I've tried to find out if there's any other meaning, you know, try to look for some other meaning in it.
Because there's so many layers to a lot of these scenes, man. There really is. Right. And then Luke makes the ultimate decision that he's going to go help. Like, it's...
Right.
And they try and tell him that if you go, that's it. And, you know, if you choose to go that, you know, you've ruined everything we've worked for or whatever. And he just says, I understand.
He's right. He's got
to
do...
He's got to do what he's got to do, man. He's got to save his friends.
That's right.
And that's... I love that about these films, that it really... Friendship means, like, a lot in these films.
There's
like
a lot of core value,
yeah,
like good life values in these films. Yeah, I love that too.
The betrayal of Lando.
Lando Calrissian is introduced, and once again,
so cool.
Once again, looks cool.
He is so cool,
he's
man.
He's wearing the bell bottoms and stuff, but the colors
and the cape.
I want to talk about. Just Cloud City in general.
Yeah.
You've been on Dagobah for a while now, and you had Hoth at the beginning, which is white. It's very white, but it's cold.
Mm-hmm.
And you get to Cloud City, and it's bright.
It's warm.
It's not white and cold. Yeah. It's warm, but it's bright, too. And the set design is awesome. The idea that this thing is floating up here is awesome.
Those three locales are great.
Yeah.
They have the best locales of the films. You know, you get the ice world.
Yes.
You get the swamp world, and you get the city in the clouds.
And while Luke is on Dagobah, it's being juxtaposed with the Cloud City footage, so you're not drained by the time you get off of Dagobah.
Yeah.
You've had some... It's like a breath of fresh air when you get to Cloud City, and you're watching all this, and they've got their apartment, and it's, you know, it's all fancy and nice, and Lando's really made something of himself, and great character, and you don't see it coming. I didn't. That he's going to betray them.
Yeah.
This brings me to one of my favorite parts in the movie. Probably one of my favorite parts in all the trilogy.
Before you get to that,
okay.
Just really quick. I like that when you first meet Lando, that you get some history on the Falcon, too. You get to find out that this guy used to own the Falcon.
Right.
And he lost it to Han. And that's just so cool. That adds so many layers to both characters. Like, whoa, this is the guy. They should be... almost like hated enemies because Han's taken something from Lando that meant a lot to him. And they talk up the ship and stuff, and Lando has kind of feels the same as Han about it. And you can see that they both love the ship. And it's just like, it's just a cool little tiny thing. It's a quick line, but it adds a layer to both characters.
Oh,
like
yeah,
this history
totally.
Where this used to be this guy's ship, and now Han's flying the ship around.
Lost it in a game, too.
Yeah.
I mean, you can fill in a lot of blanks there.
Totally.
Hanging out in some seedy places.
Yeah.
It gets intense. And
he puts the Falcon up. Did Han cheat?
Right.
You know, how did it work out that Han got this ship?
Right.
It's so cool.
So cool. And so he gets up to the part where I've just made a deal that will keep the Empire out of here for a long time. And up to that point, everything is... nice. They're going for a walk. They're going to dinner.
Well, we saw 3PO get shot.
Yeah.
So we know something's going on, but we don't really know what's going on with Lando.
Well, it happens so abruptly because as soon as that door opens,
boom!
Holy crap! Darth Vader is sitting at the table, and Han just
goes for it, dude,
and just starts shooting right.
I love that
blaster. I love
Like again with the lightsaber scene where he just thinks on his feet. It's like the minute he sees that threat, it's like, bam, I'm in action right
He draws and would have had him had
if
Vader,
for the Force.
Vader not had the Force.
Yeah, it's just, it would have been over. But he was so fast. It's just like the minute he sees him, he's ready to go.
I love that.
I do too, man. That part, I love how fast he is on the draw. And that, it's such a snap. And for a long time, I just liked the Lando character because I'm like, well, he betrayed Han.
Right.
You know, as your kid growing up, you're like, that's the guy that betrayed Han, you know?
Right.
And he makes up for it in Jedi and stuff. And even in this film, you get to find a little more that he didn't have a choice. It was either he sacrifices everybody on Cloud City to the Empire, or he sacrifices these kind of strangers at this point to him.
Really, he's been separated from Han for a long time. He doesn't know Leia at all.
He doesn't know him.
So he's
got to trade, you know, what he knows there, his basically friends and family that he's brought, he's running this place, and it's either the Empire comes in and they take over everything and ruin this entire life that all these people have,
you know what?
Or he gives up this.
He's not unprincipled, though.
Yeah.
And he shows that in Empire, after things start going south and Vader keeps changing the rules, he's like, wait a minute, this deal's getting worse all the time.
He's still trying. He's
like, hold on a second. So then he starts to, okay, I've made a mistake here, mm-hmm. obviously. And he
it's
starts,
not going
to
work out.
Right, and he starts to sort of redeem himself a little bit.
We know he's a gambling man because we saw the whole sequence of the Falcon. So he's taking the gamble, like, okay, I know that the Empire is going to wreck shop on this place if I don't give up these people. There's a chance that they might leave me alone if I just give up these people.
Right.
And so he takes the chance by, you know, by betraying Han and stuff like that, that they'll just leave him alone and they'll be free to have their lives still. And there won't be any death or whatever in this in Cloud City. So he takes the gamble. And then as he sees that the deal is getting worse and the gamble's not paying off and they're going to get destroyed and probably killed or whatever that he's going to do to Cloud City anyway, it's like, you know what? I got nothing to lose now because there's no way they're going to leave me alone.
Right.
So if they're going to, if he's going to take this girl and take this people and the people that he said that they would be safe here with me and all he wants is Han, then that's it. Deal's off. I'm going to do everything I can to save.
Puts his life on the line too.
Yeah.
And that's really where the test is, you know, when it comes down to it. So
the only sticking point is he didn't have to do the whole, I just made a deal. You know, he didn't have to say that. That's just rubbing it in. You know, that's the only sticking point where it's like, you didn't have to do that, dude. Yeah, you knew on. Who was behind the door.
Right.
Come on. You're just rubbing salt in the wound now. Right. So other than that, though, I mean, Lando does make a good character arc, you know, and he, once he makes the decision to, I'm going to help them as best I can, that's it. He's in for it because he goes and tries to help Han at that point, and he's just saving Leia and Chewie. And, you know, even then, he's also still kind of looking out for his own neck, like when they're on the ship, and he's... And Chewie has to bark him down, basically, keep him from... Because she wants to go back and get Luke, and he's like, ah, no, we're not going back, you know? Man, Lando, cool character.
He's a cool character.
Why's he got Han's clothes at the end, though?
Interesting character. Is that the end of Jedi, or
that's the end of this movie. He's flying the Falcon, and he's got on Han's clothes.
I guess if one were to explain it away, Han probably has extra clothes on the Falcon, and he wanted to change out of his dirty blue...
They weren't that dirty.
Pimp clothes.
Come on, he just wanted to put on Han's clothes.
It is weird. It is a little weird.
It's a little strange. It's like, look at these. I'm going to put these on. Han's not using them.
No problem using carbonite. Which,
funny, it turns out we're the same size.
Yeah.
He's using his toothbrush and everything. Yeah.
Sleeping in his bed.
Yeah. Hey, Chewie, what's Han's favorite drink out of this refrigerator? That's the one I'm having. I don't even like this flavor.
Colt 45. It's Colt 45.
Yeah.
But back to speaking of the carbonite.
Carbonite.
It sets up on Cloud City a spot for Luke and Vader to have their duel that looks cool. But also the carbonite itself. It's a cool idea because you get to keep the character alive.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, it looks awesome. It gives you an awesome visual to have to carry through the rest of the movie and into the next movie, which they weren't sure if Han was going to be alive or not.
Yeah.
If Harrison Ford wanted to kill the character off. But I love the carbonite idea.
The entire sequence is great, too, because you get that moment between Han and Leia,
right.
And there was big back and forth. What should Han say? What should Han say? And it was, I love you, too. They kept going back and forth. And then Kirshner said, don't think about it, just do it.
Right.
And Han does the perfect line that I know. You know, that's perfect.
That's that's been the story, but I read today that there were some transcripts. He had talked about that beforehand. Like him,
who had?
Harrison Ford and Irvin Kershner
really
had gone over it a little bit beforehand because they were having problems with it. It's true that he was having problems with the lines that he had, but he might have.
I'm going to pretend like you didn't just say all that because it's way cooler the way that Kershner tells the story.
That's why they tell the story.
Yeah, it's way cooler the way that Kershner and Harrison Ford tell the story.
It very easily could have been done that way. Yeah. I know that Harrison Ford is capable and has ad-libbed on other films.
Yeah, exactly.
But that also reveals. You know, Leia said she loves you, I love you first.
Yeah.
And she's been fighting it this whole time, and it's finally cat's out of the bag, and he does...
He knows. He's known all along.
I know.
Yeah.
But when he says that, she knows that he loves
her
back.
He does, too. Yeah,
but,
it's so good.
But he's keeping in character. He's
keeping it cool.
So cool.
Well, in that whole sequence, too, they don't know if the person's going to survive. Like, Lando's made a point that it's not meant to freeze people.
Right.
So they're going to just test it out. Like, Vader doesn't care about anybody but Luke. Right. He does not care. Everybody else is expendable. Yeah. It doesn't matter. So it's just like, okay, well, we're just going to test it on Captain Solo instead. And it's just like, that's just a throwaway life to him. He doesn't give a crap.
No, he doesn't care.
Yeah, he doesn't care. So Han's going to go into that thing and test it. And if he dies, he dies. No big deal. And it's just like, it's on the edge of the seat. You know, he's going down there and you see the face and the smoke come up.
What's
going to
happen,
like
too? When he comes out, it's like, he's stuck in that block.
Yeah, who knows what's going on in there?
And then also, I like the idea, the aspect of C-3PO also, he makes a comment at that point, which made me think of it, you know, being all taken apart. Because he's not,
yeah,
you know, it's something different. And
it's a different take on the character. And Chewbacca's going to carry him around.
Right. And Chewbacca also sort of cares about these robots that he's been with and is also mechanically inclined. Once again, he's not stupid.
Mm-hmm.
So
it's almost like something for Chewie to do to keep himself occupied too, to work on 3PO because his friend, you know, is being tortured. And that's another great sequence where Vader is just torturing him just to torture him.
Right.
He just wants to torture him. And it's just like, Vader is an evil, evil guy right now. Like, he's fully given into the dark side. It's just, he's a really evil guy. Other than the glimmer of hope with Luke. A
tiny, tiny bit.
He's just torturing Han just to torture him.
Right.
It never even asked me any questions.
He's been a big pain in the butt.
Yeah, so I'm going to torture you for a while. And what are these, do they bring that torture thing with them? Or is that just on
Cloud
City?
I guess so, yeah.
They're just bringing it around. You know?
That big
That's another thing they've got packed away with next to the AT-ATs, the torture chamber.
I'm sure they brought it down.
All right, so let's move to the big sequence.
Luke shows up.
Vader versus Luke.
Vader's there. This is a big deal.
Quick shot, real quick, Boba Fett.
Yes.
Another cool scene to Boba Fett. He walks by with Han.
Yes.
And there's really nothing to indicate that Luke is there other than R2 beeps.
He looks over.
And Fett knows.
Yeah, he knows.
He comes around and he starts shooting, man. That's a great shot with Boba Fett. Like, he knows something's up. He comes back and makes the shot.
That's cool.
That is cool.
It is cool. And he takes Han. Let's see. That made me think of something and I lost it.
Okay,
anyway, Boba Fett is cool and on the way out and whatever. So Luke shows up. And
R2's worried about 3PO too.
Mm.
On the way there, he's asking if 3PO's there with him.
Oh, right.
You know, or something like that, which I thought was
it's
a nice little touch. It's his buddy, you know. Yeah. So you get to Dagobah, or to Bespin. Luke's there. He's making his way through, and it's almost like the whole thing is silent. You
get,
know?
Yes. It's there's build up.
Yeah, there's
and
nothing.
And you know it's
going to
happen. And he didn't face Vader in the first movie.
Nope.
You always think about it's Luke versus Vader, but he didn't fight Vader in the first movie.
This is it right
here.
So
now in Empire, he finally does it for real, not in a dream or whatever in the cave. He does it for real, and the fight is above and beyond anything that was in
so far away from the first movie.
And not to such an extreme that it's ridiculous.
Yeah, where they're doing crazy,
but
jumping
just
and flipping
the
off
choreography,
the walls, episode two stuff.
He gets Luke down into the freeze chamber, and Luke, honestly, he doesn't know what's going on there. He doesn't know that Vader has frozen Han. I mean, he saw him get carried off. He saw something get carried off.
He doesn't know what it is.
Right. He doesn't know that that's the freeze chamber and, now I'm going to be in carbonite. But something's wrong.
Yeah.
He senses the danger and Vader's like, all too easy.
And Vader turns his head and then that split second, Luke makes that jump
and
he's out of there.
He's gone. Now, another case of a special use of the Force.
Yeah, that makes sense.
It kind of, like, that might have taken a lot out of Luke, because after that, he's kind of crawling around. He's not bouncing off the walls
and
stuff.
No, definitely not. He makes the leap.
He's
up
in the
there
cables.
Hanging.
Yeah, he's hanging.
And Vader still doesn't know that he's not in there. Like, he's like, perhaps you're just not as strong as the Emperor thought. And, like, he's even, like, looking down in there, and then there's the noise.
Impressive.
And Vader is impressed. Like,
Most impressive. Yes.
He's impressed that he's learned this much this fast.
Right.
You know, that he's gone from having no training. And he doesn't know that he's been trained by Yoda. Like, there's no indicator that Yoda is the one that's training him, you know, that he's learned anything from anybody else. They just think that Obi-Wan's dead, and I would assume they think that Yoda's just gone, that he's probably dead somewhere too.
Yeah, he's...
So they think he's learning this on his own, so he doesn't expect that Luke has had any training past the point where Obi-Wan died.
And then... Okay, so they have...
And again, Luke lit his lightsaber first in this whole sequence too.
That's right.
Yep.
Maybe a little bit headstrong, and probably because he's learned more, he thinks like, okay, I'm the stuff right now. But
yeah, but
still
he holsters his blaster and he goes to the lightsaber.
Yeah, very cool. Because he's got to have that duel. He's So then he gets his hand cut off, which is such an extreme. That's a a big thing to happen. Your main character losing a limb.
Yeah.
What?
That's crazy.
What? How do you...
It's totally unexpected.
I mean...
It was just like, whoa!
Yeah. Luke gets his hand cut off.
He's been completely handicapped, because, I mean, we don't know about robot hands at this point, really.
Right.
We just know that he just lost his hand, you know, and that was this hand he was using to hold his gun and his lightsaber.
It's not looking good for Luke.
It's looking real bad.
Because...
He's messed up. He's lost a hand.
Yeah.
We think that now that the things that Yoda and Obi-Wan were telling him are about to come true. Like, you've gone to do this thing, and it's going to ruin everything.
That's it.
And right here it is. It's going to happen to you right now.
Right. And then Vader spills the beans, which we all know now. But once again, like you, I've tried to put myself in the position of not knowing and seeing that for the first time. And that was kept under wraps.
Three people knew about it as they filmed it.
Right. And
that was George Lucas, Irvin Kershner, and Mark Hamill. And Mark Hamill was told right beforehand.
Right.
That, okay, he's going to be saying these lines, David Prowse is, but what you're going to react to is the fact that he just said he's your father.
Yeah.
And only three people know this. And if it gets out, it's you that gave it up.
Right.
And that's crazy. And Mark Hamill was just like, he was just on this Ask Me Anything thing. He was saying the pressure was huge to not tell anyone.
Oh, I bet.
This thing.
How could
that
you,
I just found
yeah,
out.
Yeah, I bet.
That's huge.
James Earl Jones was talking about it in, once again, The Empire of Dreams, and he said, when I read the line... he said, I thought, he's lying. And he said, I wonder how they're going to play this lie out.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it doesn't,
yeah, you're bewildered by it. You're like,
right.
Oh my goodness, this is crazy.
And there's
that the main villain is the father of the main hero.
And there's just a couple little things that happen after that. He gets his robotic hand put on, and they're on the ship.
I want to interject one thing.
Oh, yeah, go ahead.
On the special edition, they add a scream. Into him falling down.
Yes.
And I hate that.
I hate it too.
I love that Luke accepted his fate. Like, he's like, right. Vader's telling him, you're going to join me or that's it.
He jumped.
He just like looks down and he just kind of almost, he smiles almost and he just lets go. And it's like,
go.
He's given in. Like,
he's saying, I'd rather have this
than join you guys. Right. And that's a huge moment because it's just like such a moment where he's accepted it and he'd rather sacrifice himself than have himself be turned. Or
right.
Give into that, or whatever they're going to do.
Or even face the idea that his father... That
he just gives
it
up. And there's no scream that's involved. He's accepted it.
Right.
But they added that scream, and it's just horrendous.
It's really bad.
I made a mistake!
Oh no, I shouldn't have
joined you!
Okay, come and get me, I'll join you!
It's horrible to add that scream in there. I don't know why you would do that, but they added it in there.
I think it's just because they were going through and they're just, oh, we could do this here. Oh, okay, let's do it.
Might as well.
Just because we can, let's do it. But that's the end of the movie. You're left hanging with...
Oh, it's crazy. I mean, Luke gets down to the thing, he's hanging on the weather vane, and he uses the Force. And we got that little snippet where Yoda says there is another.
Yeah.
So we think that there's somebody else. And so then we get the moment of Luke
calling
out to Leia, and she can hear him.
But you know what? I wouldn't think about it at that point.
You wouldn't think about it at that point.
Because I wasn't thinking Leia. But she kissed him earlier in the movie, too.
Yeah, you think back, and now you're like, okay, that's why she can hear him, is because that's his sister.
Looking back, yeah.
Now you understand
that,
okay, she can attune to it. She is the other that Yoda's referring to.
Right.
The evidence is right there in front of you, but it's not blatant to the point where it's like, I'm going to spell it out for you. That's his sister.
Right.
But it seeds that then when you go back and watch the film again after you know everything, there it is for you right there. That's his sister.
Right.
And then she makes the trip back and they save him and he gets the robotic hand and all that stuff. But man, you talk about ending on a major down note
and
a major cliffhanger.
Big cliffhanger. You got to wait 2 years.
Han's frozen in carbonite. Where's he going? He's with Jabba the Hutt. They're going to try and find him.
Who's
What's going to happen to him?
We
haven't even seen Jabba
yet.
We've just heard about Jabba. Is Vader Luke's father or is he not Luke's father? Who is the other? You know, all these different things. The rebellion's in rough shape right now.
Yeah.
And the Empire's just like wrecking shop. What's going to happen?
What is going to happen?
I couldn't imagine
waiting. You know, for me, I saw Jedi first, and I had that taped, and I watched Jedi over and over again, and it wasn't until sometime a little bit later, I was at a friend's house, and he said, hey, you want to watch Empire Strikes Back? And I was like... What is that? What are you talking about? Empire Strikes Back. Okay, whatever. I'll watch it. And I was like, wait a minute. I know all these characters.
Yeah.
Wait a second. This is another Star Wars film. So I didn't even know. You know, I already knew everything by that time. But at that age, I still couldn't grasp Empire. I couldn't grasp it. The movie.
It is. It's like a bit of a higher level.
It really
is. Story wise and character wise and everything than Jedi. I love Jedi, but it's just it's a step higher. the wait between Star Wars and Empire Strikes Back must have been kind of rough for people, mm-hmm. you know, when they first saw Star Wars. I can't wait to see the next one. But you're not left on a cliffhanger in that film.
Right. There aren't, like, a whole lot of questions to be answered. It's
the Rebellion won.
The Rebellion won. They blew up the Death Star.
Here Luke we are. I want to see more adventures.
Works,
I can't wait.
Right. You know, it works as a standalone movie.
When you end on Empire and you have to wait 3 years for Return of the Jedi, that is torturous.
Yeah.
You know, that, I imagine, like, nowadays when I watch a show, between seasons of a show, like the season ender and then the next season, a few months, whatever, this is an entire 3 years where you've got nothing, where it's just,
right.
okay, well, wait it out. And it's not like the internet or anything like that was right. around back then.
Right.
You had fanzines and things like that. So there was no spoilers of finding out, you know, what's going to happen in Return of the Jedi other than little things, you know, we read in a magazine where it's like, oh, so apparently this is going right. to happen in the next Star Wars film.
You had to have patience.
Man, that's a killer wait. And, I mean, going to see Jedi must have been fantastic.
Oh,
coming
yeah.
off of Empire. You know, I was young. When Jedi came out, I was 5 years old. So I'm sure that's where I ended up seeing Empire, was through a double feature with that or whatever.
Right.
Star Wars with that, I don't know. But the wait didn't mean anything to me as a kid because I was a little kid, so I wasn't, like, looking forward to...
Right.
If I was at my age now and I saw Empire Strikes Back and then had to wait 3 years for Return of the Jedi, I'd be losing my mind.
You'd be pulling your hair out trying to figure out what
happens. Losing my mind, man.
I wonder if they'll do that with the new... if there's, like, make
I
some big
so.
Surprises with the
I
new
hope
one.
So. But with the internet and everything like that, it's tough to keep
it
a
is
surprise
a, it's a
anymore.
Different It's a different world. They're keeping a surprise... Mark Hamill just said he wasn't sure who... If his character was even going to be in it, which
he
I think is
he said that there's nothing been set in stone, that there's nothing finalized. And the minute that there's something is, he'll let everybody know.
I don't believe him.
I hope he's not telling the truth because he should have been in the gym for the last 6 months.
Oh, yeah.
If that is not the case.
Should have been. Also, the script is done. So, look, dude, you're either in it or not because J.J. Abrams has said, I want to focus on...
The original trilogy. That's what everybody's saying.
I
want to
focus on Luke, Leia, and
that.
Han. That's those.
If you haven't approached Mark Hamill yet, like if there's not a right. deal set with Mark Hamill right. yet, though, don't make a Star World
you
without
know,
Mark Hamill.
You know, really, we haven't heard anything from Mark. He's been locked away pretty much for the last few months, so I'm sure that he's just sworn to secrecy and there's nothing he can
I hope so.
Say about it.
If it's a new Star World and it does not have Mark Hamill's Luke Skywalker and it takes place within that universe, I'm going to be
It'll be disappointing
so
because...
That's what I want.
That's what I want. Han and Leia, especially not Leia, but Han, okay, it's cool, but if Han just shows up and Luke isn't there?
No, thanks.
Nah, no, it's all right.
I want Luke.
That's right.
Luke is the central character of the entire Star Wars universe. It's
like,
just
like
really...
Yes. Like I said...
The prequels are building up to Luke happening, and then the original trilogy is Luke's journey.
Right.
And then I want to see more of Luke. I want to see Luke now becoming what Obi-Wan was in the
right.
Star Wars New Hope. You know,
and
I want to see that.
Yes. And once again, you know, just have him grow a beard. If he can't lose all the weight, fine. Throw some robes on him and have him grow a beard. He'd be fine. Another thing that Empire brought, real quick, we gotta wrap this up. It's been a long one. And the other thing that Empire brought was better action figures.
I have that written down.
Oh, good.
I have that written down as well. I'll make sure I got everything. I put Kenner gets good.
The first line was fun, and it's fun to look back on as nostalgia. When you see that Luke Hoth figure...
The sculpting on it is fantastic.
Whoa!
It still holds up.
Whoa! Because he's sort of posed, and he's got the extra headpiece, and it's another level.
Mm-hmm.
For Kenner and for toys in general, really.
There's a lot of figures throughout the Empire Strikes Back
yes.
line that are just a major step up.
Yes.
I mean, I think a lot of people criticize Dengar, but that figure is really well sculpted. Like, it's got a lot of detailing going on in the sculpt.
It's a cool figure. You had Boba Fett, which didn't have the rocket firing.
Yeah, and that was a tail end Star Wars release, you know,
right.
into the mail away figure and all that different stuff.
The way
but it's still, yes. the sculpting was fantastic.
Right.
You know, and all the there's a bunch in there. The Yoda figure's great.
You had such a cast to choose from too, and everybody.
Two Bespin guards.
I know that's the ridiculous thing.
Two ridiculous. Come on.
Two Bespin guards.
Two unique sculpts.
And no new Vader.
No new Vader. You're gonna tell me you're gonna do two Bespin guard sculpts, totally different yeah. when they wear the same outfit, and you're not gonna update Darth Vader?
Right. Ridiculous.
Come on, Kenner.
Come on, Kenner. But
I don't get too far into
but
that.
But everybody. All the main characters pretty much had two figures for each because they had their Hoth, everybody in their Hoth gear.
And then Bespin slash Dagobah, whatever.
Han in his Hoth outfit is one of my favorite
I love figures. That was my first Han figure as a kid.
Oh, yeah.
It was Han Hoth. That was my first Han. And I loved playing with that Han. Man, yeah. that Han Ha figure is so awesome.
It's awesome.
It really is cool.
But great. That's when the line got great.
Mm-hmm.
And they started really expanding vehicles. And you had a lot of vehicles to choose from and everything.
And
so.
It just kept the ball just kept rolling into Jedi. The Jedi sculpts are fantastic.
Oh, yeah.
They really are just stellar. I mean, they're still, to this day, greatly sculpted figures.
Yeah. I agree.
Yeah. I'm glad you mentioned that.
But anyway, so that's that. This has been an Empire world. A rare instance where the sequel is better than the first
totally
one,
agreed.
First movie.
Totally agreed. There's not that many where the sequels are
there aren't.
Superior to the first movie.
But this is definitely one of them. So, hope you've enjoyed this. Take a trip down memory lane. Go watch Empire Strikes Back.
Watch a Star Wars.
You know what else
two.
I love about it? It's not called Star Wars and Empire Strikes Back. The movie was just called The Empire Strikes Back.
Yep.
I love that.
I think it's great.
I think it's
great. I mean, it grabs you right off the bat. Like,
it does.
Whoa, the Empire has been knocked down on the end of this first one, and now they're going to strike back. Rebels are in
that's
trouble.
Right
off the title, the Rebels are
it's
in trouble.
It's unconventional also to have
yep.
the bad guys be the feature of the title.
Yeah.
It's great movie.
I tell you what, man. As much as I love talking Empire... And Empire is my favorite.
Yeah,
I cannot wait to talk about Return of the Jedi.
I know. I want to do it too.
I love Return of the Jedi.
I do too.
I hate when people dog Return of the Jedi.
We'll get
because
we'll
it is awesome.
We'll get to it. And
I can't wait.
I can't wait either. It's gonna be great.
Sorry okay. for not a lot of jokes and stuff this time around, but you should have known that when you started the episode.
Sorry, guys. We love this movie.
We really really love Star Wars, the original trilogy, and so when it comes down to it, we just really like to geek out. It's not. Where we want to fit in as much humor as we can into what we're talking about. We really just want to geek out and talk about this. And we hope that you're like listening and feeling like you're talking with a couple of friends about a Star Wars.
Also, we're not that funny. We want if you guys That's have true. anything that we did not mention, go ahead and mention it to us. Go ahead and post it on our Facebook
page. Yeah, post it on actionfeatures.net, post it on the Facebook page. Tell us about it.
Yeah, I'd be interested.
We're always happy to talk a Star Wars.
And at the end, we'll ask people what their favorite Star Wars film is.
Last thing. Okay. Keaton's birthday is tomorrow.
Happy birthday,
so
Keaton.
I just want to say on air, happy birthday, Keaton. He's 7 years old tomorrow.
All right, the big seven.
The big seven. I cannot believe.
I know.
It's been 7 years since
I can't either.
Born. That's insane to me.
I remember carrying Blaze around the shop when
Isn't
he was
Isn't that crazy?
A
putting
baby.
Him in the Tupperware thing. Or not the Tupperware, but like the plastic bin.
Yeah.
And flying him around the thing when he was a little tiny, tiny guy.
Yeah.
And now...
He couldn't this even
one's,
talk.
Yeah, and this now, one's... It's crazy.
And now he's walking away from a Transformers 4.
He hears about it, he just walks away.
He just walks away.
Yeah. It's crazy, man.
That's... Well, happy birthday, Keaton.
Yeah.
All right.